All right. So Evelyn is twerking in the prom in front of her window.
Twerking in front of the window. And in all of my plus size, shake what your mama gave you glory. And dude is looking at me like, are you serious right now? And then I'm like, real ass bitch, give a fuck about a nigga. Real Birkin bag hoe, 5-6 figures. And he's just like, are you okay? And I was like, what, that's too U.S. American for you? I was like, should I just switch it up? And he was like, so you're going to just twerk in the window and proceed to sing in like 4 different languages. And I was like, bitch, that's what I do. So it went from like City Girls to El General to like, I brought him back. It was so, it was about a 7-minute concert. So if you by any chance catch me on the Shade Room or something like that, because my neighbors might be taking stocks.
Maybe like Red Tube, actually.
You right. Except right. That with the way that these titties just going to the floor, they ain't even catching nothing good. Like, they just like, you know what?
Everyone got their flavor.
Exactly. They're probably watching out there like, oh, there she is. There's probably going to be a viewing party one day that Caña Negra can organize with popcorn and everything outside on the street.
I'm here for it because we are sex positive in Caña Negra.
There you go.
And on that note, welcome to another episode of Radio Caña Negra. We are your amazing, badass hosts. Coming to you internationally, right? Internationally, coming to you from different spaces in the world to be able to just kind of share some stories, some truths, some jokes, and some love.
Yep. Yup. And I know this is not your, you know, this is going to grow into your typical podcast, but right now it is not. So don't have an expectation of an intro and outro and all that kind of stuff. That will grow into that. But right now we feel that we just want to get this rolling for everybody.
Well, we were moved by this week's events. That has now become a meme and I'm like so upset by it.
Bullshit. Yeah. So yeah, and this is why we came on and we said let's get this done now. So who wants to update the listening audience on, you know, what happened in a nutshell?
Well, a 16-year-old Carol Sanchez, a Garifuna teenager from the Yes, Garifuna in the house. Well, Central Americans in the house, right? Just
yeah, all three of us.
But specifically this case, this girl, this child, organized her own kidnapping, which I don't even like the language of that.
Exactly. I don't, allegedly.
Yeah, let's you know, just put it in a nutshell that this is what people are saying, that she orchestrated her own kidnapping, which turned out to be a hoax, obviously, with her 23-year-old boyfriend, meaning someone who is an adult. She is a child because she did not want to go back to her family's native Honduras. And so I've been getting a couple different reasons why. Some people are saying, or it has been consistent that people are saying that her mother is really strict and her mother rightfully wanted to keep her underage daughter away from a man. And so I've been getting in from Genevieve and Evelyn that the mom had an order of deportation to Honduras. And then from other sources, I heard, so instead of getting deported, she could self-deport. And the daughter, what is consistent is the daughter did not want to go to Honduras. Obviously, her whole life is in the Bronx, is in New York, that all of that is understandable. And so she felt desperate and she orchestrated her own kidnapping while she was taking a walk with her mom. Then she appeared 24 hours later after the news got too hot. They sent out an Amber Alert and people were on the lookout and she appeared less than 24 hours later. And that's, I guess she confessed the hoax.
Yeah, to me, there's a lot of gaps, and you know, I think part of what's gonna make Caña Negra is us like really challenging these kind of stories and narratives that people just are quick to jump on, especially men, right? And people that design media, because, and I want to use the proper language regarding the 23-year-old. He's a rapist in New York City. Right? 17 and under is intercourse with 17-year-old males or females when you're over a certain age is statutory rape. I know that there's some like, you know, there's a close age, like a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old. I think there's some kind of discretions that are given or in that law. But this man is 23 years old.
Yeah, because a 17 and an 18-year-old are in the same peer group.
Correct.
So right? That's understandable, no?
But a 23-year-old, yeah, right? I feel like we need to use the proper language, because otherwise, you know, I've heard so many things. Like, people are like, oh, she seduced them. Why? But I've also heard that 12-year-olds seduce grown men, too. So yep. It's like, you know, that narrative around this over-sexualized, us being over-sexualized and fat, you know, see, suelta. What other names are, you know, ratona, suelta, puta. All those names are associated, especially with young girls that want, you know, that always want to be in these situations, right? Because they put themselves in these situations with these grown men. So I wonder that
they hunt these children. They seek them out.
Of course. They're predators. They're predators in these communities. And as long as the narrative is always putting their responsibility on the young women, on the girls, then nothing is going to change. As long as we even use the language around, you know, this man and, you know, 23-year-old. And my biggest thing here with all this is, you know, like I was having an argument with my partner, of all people. You know, if four men decide to kidnap this girl, how does a 16-year-old convince four 23-year-olds, right? Because part of it is a 16-year-old brain is not fully developed, right? That lobe I don't even think my brain is fully developed, number one, right? Because that the lobe that deals with consequences, it seems that it's not fully formed. And this is why teenagers feel like they're on top of the world and they're invincible, because there's
everything. That
consequence is not there. So, but a 23-year-old, they do have fully developed brains that tell you, that make you think about consequences, right? So how does a 16-year-old convince four 23-year-old men to snatch her up in the street? To me, that story just doesn't fit. What I honestly think is that she wanted to break up with him or something along those lines. He said, fuck that, because men are also, you know, most domestic violence and murders of Black women within households happen because of passion crimes. So I think he said, oh, hell no. How many times have we heard, if I can't have her, no one will? We've heard that so many times in our lives.
Yep.
And he probably said, fuck no, nobody else, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then snatch her up the street with his friends.
That's, or maybe even convinced her that I'm for you, we're together, we go together. Because I'm sure she obviously informed him that it was a possibility that she would be leaving New York. And he, you know, devise the plan, because I don't really think this 16-year-old was like, hey, you know what, let's get three of your homies.
Right.
Or maybe she did, but still, the four men consented to this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think there's even
more for adult men.
What I've seen in contemporary adolescent relationships is that because of the use of the phone in ways that older people never had access to it, like, there's a lot of, like, where are you right now? Where are you going? Where, you know, like, there's, so I know that there's times where there's, like, pin drops where people are. So there's even the possibility that she may not have even been on it.
Uh-huh.
But that she felt compelled to then take the responsibility because they're in a relationship and she don't want to fuck it up, right? Or she wants to
have a record.
Right. Or potentially, like, protect him from either obtaining a new record or getting something else happening to him. So I feel like there's lots of ways in which this really does not, you know, exonerate her to some degree. And I think that there's so many other conversations that are really needed to have. A, the reality that, like, having these types of age gap relationships, right, that is a horrible thing that I think happens to young women everywhere, but particularly, I mean, in my experience, I had a significantly older boyfriend when I was younger. My sister had one. And I think that there was also the cultural belief that, like, they were supposed to, like, take care of you.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And where that kind of, that where there's room for that conversation. In addition to, like, just the immigration issues that happen when, what happens to, like, is she U.S. born, Carol, right? Mm-hmm. And if she's not, what is her experience? Like, how does that work itself out? Because I think that there's also a room, like, for example, even my own self, having been threatened with being sent back home because I committed an infraction.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that is really scary and would lead people to do desperate things. I probably would have tried to do the same thing.
I completely had access
to having somebody who would do it for me.
Mm-hmm. No, you know? Evelyn, I really like that point that you brought up about where you at, the pin drop. Yeah. Because we do, amongst ourselves, we do that. And we may not, I'm not even in the same country as y'all. And I'd be like, where y'all at? You know? And so, the whole situation, because what really just, because there's a lot of parts of this that disturb me. I've literally lost sleep over it, where they snatched her and pushed her mom, like, yes, pushed the mom to the ground. And I saw in the video, I think the mom uses a cane or some type of device to help her.
Umbrella or something, like, was she holding the umbrella? Because it was raining that night too.
Yeah, oh, was it? Okay. Night, well, she was using it to support herself either way. Uh-huh. And they pushed her down to the sidewalk. And I'm really glad you brought that up, because the narrative has been that she single-handedly orchestrated this from her own devices, which on one hand, I'm like, even if she did, let's just say that she did, so what? She's a 16-year-old girl, just like you. I would have done, well, I probably wouldn't have carried it out, because I'm still definitely afraid of my mom. But who has not thought of doing that or has done something similar to that as a 16-year-old? Because, you know, a 16-year-old thinks they know everything. My mom doesn't know anything. I'm going to take control of my life, how I feel that I have access to, because I have access over my personhood and my body. So I'm going to stay here. Yeah. And so I'm really, really glad you brought that up, because it just opens up the conversation to more possibilities rather than, oh, well, you know, this feisty girl out of control, she needs her ass beat. Because I've been seeing that.
Response. This girl, if her up to people on social media, she would be stoned in the middle.
Certainly.
She would be stoned, and her whole family would need to leave, because the stuff that I've been reading about the attack on her mother, her parenting style, like, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, I don't understand. And, you know, why do people have, I don't understand why, first of all, the amount, and I feel like there's so many compartments to this story, right? And one is like, there's the race piece, right? The response from, first of all, the lack of response that Black people usually get around kidnapping and disappearances is one. So yeah, they got the attention this one time. That's one.
And they're mad at that.
And some Black people jumping on, yes, about from the next one. I remember a few years ago, there was a runaway bride. there were children missing in Cancun with their teachers, and they enacted all these things. There's, you know, kids that are taken away by another parent or parents are feuding, and there's kidnapping, Amber Alert, all that kind of stuff. When was it, when, that was the first Amber Alert that I ever got that I know of for somebody that's Black in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. there are articles coming out. There are like 14 girls missing in the Bronx. So one, I feel like one thing is race. Let's look at the race piece around that. The second thing is immigration. This story, we have to, and this is why when immigration cannot be separate from race, mm-hmm. because this girl, when it first came out, it was a Black girl, which she is. She's a Black girl. And then when the three of us were like, wait a minute, this girl is an immigrant descendant, right? Or she's an immigrant. And then, you know, I feel like if this had been somebody from, and no hate or shade to my other Central Americans that are not Black, but if this had been like a young girl from Mexico or Guatemala or Salvador, I feel immigrant rights organizations would have jumped on it.
Immediately.
Oh, absolutely.
Immediately. Immigrant rights organizations would have been on the hunt, press releases, it would have been on Fox. It would not the Fox Latino, Univision, all those stations. My family was on in the Bronx at my mother-in-law's, who she only watches Spanish news stations. And Omar told me that it was not mentioned not once. Meanwhile, it's on like ABC News and different news stations in the U.S. And those are U.S.-based too, the Latino ones. But nothing was mentioned there.
They had a couple write-ups online I saw, but it was very limited. It was, and it was because I was seeking it out. It wasn't that it was it, as banners. And so when I first saw the picture and I saw her name, I just immediately assumed she was Dominican. Just, you know, based on my experience. And so then I, you know, 24 hours later, I find out she's Garifuna, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, obviously that makes sense. There's a large Garifuna population in the Bronx. But the thing that it has been really irking me with that is the jokes that people are making around deportation, and the fact that people don't know what it is to some people don't know what it is to uproot your life. Because if she was born here, maybe she has visited Honduras, we don't know. Or maybe she has never even been there. And so to so easily make a deport, and deportation jokes has been on the radar for the past 3 to 5 years, and it really, really bothers me. Not only because I have an immigrant family, but my husband is Cuban, and his immigration story has been, we are still in the middle of it 5 years later, and people think it's as easy as filling out paperwork and boom, you're there. No. It's a tangled web, and people get denied all the time. And the situation in Honduras is nothing to laugh about.
Correct. People are living in war-like conditions in Honduras. Land being taken away, especially the Garifuna community, where their land is being grabbed up, and a lot of times, right, you know, people from the United States. And this is where I feel there needs to be honest conversations with our African-American brothers and sisters, because a lot of times these lands and communities are being grabbed up by our African-American brothers and sisters. That's also something that is true. It's real. The resorts, you know, the a lot of the clientels and the resorts, you know, Black travel is up in, you know, what is that called? It's booming right now. And a lot of travel that's not, you know, through Afro-Latino travel, of course. Yeah. Right, it's based in a lot of
resistencia.
See, but ours is a little bit different, right? Because we don't go to resorts. Well, at least, you know, Afro resistance, we don't go to resorts, because some travel stuff go to these lands and resorts that displaced communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's very different from the work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. And so the other part, the other portion of it with her case becoming, people being upset that her case became a priority, and that it took away from other cases, she should be a priority, number one. Number two, y'all did your job. Your job is to find out, one, the person, or two, if it is a hoax, you did your job. Good job. That's what our tax dollars are going towards. So good on you. And so...
the response is accurate. The response meets what the crime is, right? Like, it, when, like, people almost act as if, A, their little 5 minutes of forwarding a meme or whatever, of forwarding her picture, is somehow took so much of them that they deserve her really having been at some sort of risk, right? Which, who's to say that she wasn't? That's the other side, that it's like, we don't know that she wasn't, and we don't have any absolute authority. And because, just because she is unharmed doesn't mean that she's safe. So
or appears unharmed, right?
Right. That her she appears physically unharmed doesn't mean that she is unsafe, right? Or that doesn't mean that she's safe. And so this kind of idea that we have
the right kind of victim, right?
Right. Or the right kind of victim, or that we have a right to feel like our own frustration or anger somehow overrides the needs of the person who is actually
And that also speaks about how the archetype of whiteness and blackness, because black women, we're not seen as victims ever, right? Ever. We are seen as equal partners or aggressors to violence.
Co-conspirators.
Exactly. If we had like a feeble looking white girl that turns herself in, then there'll be a lot of compassion, understanding, a lot of questioning around what happened.
She's only a kid.
Situation. Has she ever been bullied? Obviously, she had to been bullied at school, or something happening in her family, or maybe she's part of the opioid crisis. You know, it'll be all these analysis and, you know, stipulations. But because she's just a black girl from the Bronx, you know, who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
And I've seen responses that were like, I've seen some responses where people were like, 16, where? And I was like, wow, typical. Y'all love to show that you hate us. They were really questioning her age. They were questioning her age.
Or this like adultification of black girls that happens.
Correct.
Where we are expected to, you know, to your point about like our, it's like our, like knowledge that we have that is biological knowledge, right? We seem to not be able to adapt it to everyone the same. So then what, like, it's so unbelievably frustrating that people would jump to this idea of A, she deserves to get her ass beat, because that's obviously the only parenting tool that we have access to all the time. That as soon as your children, right, as soon as a person does something that we don't like or we don't think is okay, that we cannot somehow manage to have conversation, and that there's this odd desire for like harsh accountability on our part, that other people get a right to be able to not have access to these types. Like, why is it that the accountability has to be so punitive?
Always to inflict violence.
Always to inflict violence. And then they get mad when people are violent.
So I'm gonna read like two comments, right? That were posted on Facebook. If people want to avoid the justice system, they should not commit crimes. And I don't care what color they are. She was hanging out with a convicted murderer and a gang member. Right? Another one says, I'm not convicting her, you know, but faking your own kidnapping is nasty. If there is a law against that, she would face double trouble. And she should, whether she's 16 or not. If deportation is a punishment, then oh well, she'll be facing that. Thus has been the conversation on this thread. This is a thread on Facebook, you know. So it's like, those are just like, some like crazy, there's some crazy people out there. Some vile people out there.
It's astonishing and appalling. And
it's not only black people. It's not only white people. It's black people too.
Well, I mean, that's the only ones I was reading because I, you know, that's what I care about. And it's shocking reading how much anger are in these responses. Yes. it really floors me because it's like, where is that coming from, number one? You know, number one, where is that coming from in your body? To sit there and actually express that unabashedly where other people can read it. Yeah. That was my first thing.
Because
you're unashamed by this. You're just off with their heads approach for a child.
And encourage. Like I saw, so I have at least 3 or 4 friends, you know, online, the people that I follow that are school leaders. And they were happily posting memes that suggested that this girl should go home and get beat. Like, I have real concerns with the whole, or this idea.
And you have people in contact with children.
Right. Like, you.
Our children.
I have concerns.
Yeah, of course.
And I had to really, like, at least one of them, I had to really pull them aside or DM them, right? And be like, this is whack. Like, let's just preface everything by going by, this is whack, right? And I have concerns with your default to this without knowing significant details of the case, right? You know what we know.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your jump to this, and the fact that you think this is funny, like, I really... No, like this is, it is unbelievable. And I saw lots of memes in the Garifuna community that were almost 100% leading toward, she's an embarrassment. She should get her ass beat. Her mother should put her out. Like this is.
She should get deported back.
Yeah.
You know,
or even the fear that she potentially somehow put her mother at more risk with INS, because now it's like the idea is that you have to be this perfect person in order to even gain some sort of immigration possibilities. And so now this reflects poorly on whatever efforts the mother may have made to be able to stay, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you need the right support, because I would argue that it actually speaks to how desperate the situation was, that would actually be an alternative for them. And then there was also the idea that there was also people that were complaining because apparently during the course of the press conference that the mother was crying and Carol was somewhat what people perceived as indifferent. But really, what we do know is that when your amygdala hijack happens, right, which is what happens when you have flooded with cortisol, you have all this stress, that you can do fight or flight and you can also do freeze and appease. So that means that your response is not always in line with what somebody else may have. Right? Mom may be experiencing all types of regret, realizing what her role was in Carol taking such an extreme step, if she actually at all took it.
Actually did.
Right?
Or the danger that her daughter was in.
Right. Like, that's fucking scary. I would be absolutely petrified. And also, I would be thinking, wow, like, you know what? Did I contribute to this at all? And if I know that I probably did, I would feel really shitty about it.
Yeah, and embarrassed.
Embarrassed,
both of them.
I'm embarrassed. Yeah.
Now they'd be mortified.
Yeah.
Imagine going through this, having memes about you, having people basically in your death as a 16-year-old. I can't even imagine that. I can't imagine that now as a 30-something-year-old. I would go into hiding.
Yeah.
And she's subject as a 16-year-old.
Yeah. And this is communities where, like, especially I know that for the Garifuna community, like, one of the things is that we are, who are your people? So, like, the respect you get, the support you get is all in line with, like, who are your people? It is no problem for somebody to drop down, like, oh, are you the girl of the grandfather who...
Correct.
And I know that that has to be something that people are actively thinking about. And it was just, it's really, like, it was super fucked up because, again, I don't know that there's any real proof. I mean, I don't know anything that suggests that she was really, like, in on it. Just because somebody takes the blame for something doesn't mean
that
she actually...
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly my point. I honestly don't think that she staged it. That's me. I'm not there. I'm not her. I'm not the rapist. I'm not the rapist friend. I'm none of that. So, but what I think is that she did not stage it, and she's under threat from her rapist to not say anything.
And that's a good point. That you're bringing
and then up. The other thing is, like, there's still not a conversation around statutory rape here and protecting Black girls. There's nothing. Evelyn, at the conversation that we were at a few weeks ago, last week, one of the panelists shared that she had been raped since she was a little girl by a family member living in her household. Mm-hmm. From, I think, when she was 5 or 6 years old. And she had nowhere to go when she was 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. At 14, she starts abusing drugs and being with older men that are supposed to take care of her. I'm not saying that this is the case, but I'm saying that we have to start having conversations around the safety, all aspects of safety, not only physical safety, but mental, emotional, psychological safety of our girls, recognizing, and Evelyn, what you just said was really important around culture, recognizing that our cultures sometimes, most times, are oppressive towards us.
Yes. Yes,
they facilitate our insecurity and the violence inflicted on us.
And they protect the men. Whatever it is, the default. And this conversation, not this conversation, but this narrative around the 16-year-old, the responsibility has been shifted by the men that kidnapped them.
Totally. They don't even get, they don't get any
type. It disappears from the narrative.
Yeah. Pretty quickly, because of the hate that we have for girls that suggests that even though these people are further along in their brain development that make decisions of their own, that somehow she had to be the person who
mastermind.
Only logical. That's the only logical explanation.
That the 16-year-old is a mastermind.
Right. Uh-huh. The 16-year-old mastermind, because these men just acted because
men.
They just, oh my gosh, they're just poor victims men. Too. They're victims too, essentially, right?
Like, and I was thinking about how if, in fact, this 23-year-old man was, in fact, the boyfriend of this child, they said he has gang connections. I can't even imagine, as a mother, what do you do in that situation? Do you report him and risk retaliation?
Mm-hmm.
Do you report, hey, this man is preying on my daughter, and they're all living in the community. He lives in the community, I'm sure. Or if not, he has friends that live in the community. So now you're putting yourself in danger. At that point, maybe the mom did, you know, again, bringing it back to the immigration aspect of it. Maybe the mother did feel that was the only option for safety for her child. And from what I saw on the video, the mother looks a little bit older.
Yeah.
And so that mother-daughter dynamic as well. There's so many variables in this that it is shocking how people have, well, it's not shocking. We shouldn't be shocked by this, right? Because it's been normalized. How people have oversimplified it into the evil whims of Black women. Because she's been adultified. She's not even a girl anymore. She's a woman. And the focus is now on her and her mother. But realistically, what would anyone have done in that situation? My daughter is in danger. This older man. What were her options? What was the mom's option in that situation? And I'm really posing that question to you two, because I think that's what I've been losing the most sleep over. Because if he has gang ties, and we're also talking about Honduras, where there is gang activity as well, where do you turn to? What are your options? What are your options there?
Mm-hmm. Especially where there's no support or resources in the community that you live in to really have these conversations and address it, you know, because these are not isolated incidences. And we are so, and I feel that we are so socialized, we're so accustomed to be so personal and hush, hush, don't be talking about these kind of stuff, that more than likely, there hasn't been like a sister-to-sister collectively held conversation around like, how do we deal with these older men with our young girls, even though a lot of girls are dating or being sought after, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, by all the by these older men, and parents feel like they have no control over it, mm-hmm. or no options. I've seen, I saw around 4 years ago when I was working at a high school in the Bronx, I saw a cop flirt with a little girl, and I stood and looked at him. Mm-hmm. And he's a cop that's doing his little patrol thing, which I hate that there's cops in these public schools. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at her. She came over. He's talking to her. And then I stopped. And I said, that's inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And the girl walked away. And then the cop just looked at me like, what you going to do?
Uh-huh.
And I was pregnant. And, you know, I'm old.
I think
this is cool. So if cops are
like safety and protection, there's none for us. What are our options?
No.
Yeah. So maybe that's one of the questions that we should pose for the listening folks, the community. What are the options that black immigrant families or black families have to protect children, their daughters
in what recourse do we
in
have?
The communities? Correct.
What recourse? I'm at a loss. I've been stuck on this part. I've been absolutely stuck.
I think that the reality is that my beliefs around parenting have always been that the parenting requires an intentionality that often we're not encouraged to give it. Right? That as people, we're just like, oh, well, you got pregnant, figure it out, right? That there often is no real planning for what to do when you have children or how you want to handle certain situations. And that also we have been taught in certain cultures that critique of the culture is so disloyal that it almost makes us not part of the culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
That to me is a lost opportunity because then we start to become so like anti something else that we don't really begin to recognize what the benefits are of doing things that are outside of the culture that help us actually like grow.
It's a disservice to our own survival.
Yes.
And well-being and safety.
Yeah. And so I recognize that there was a time where, you know, and that prevents us from being able to really either build the communities that we really want or to seek the support that we need, because then we are so caught up on if I go there or if I do things like this, that somehow that's going to say that I am not, that I don't value what I was raised with. When I can certainly say, I recognize that when I was a kid and my mom beat me out of fear and out of a lack of analysis of what it is that her experience or her desires for me were, that is complete. I have a different, that, like, you know, when people say things like, you know, I know a lot of the conversation lately has moved toward like, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams type of thing. But I would say that like, part of me feeling like I am my ancestors' wildest dreams is that I'm able to take different things that they didn't have access to.
Correct.
And be able to implement it in my own life, right?
Correct.
And so I don't necessarily have to be
being ostracized. That's another risk too.
And so that's the whole, like, that feeling of being ostracized is very real. And so I want to hold space for the fact that, like, that is a very real feeling, and that people, particularly in insular communities, that they don't want to do anything to even risk their status in this community, mm-hmm. because this community is what they know. But I would argue that if community was kinder, then you could dip in and out, and that no one would question whether you really belonged here because you
Correct.
Were, this is the goal for you.
Correct.
So I think that for me is like, how do we expand our beliefs about what it is to be in community so that people in the community can recognize what they need that doesn't exist in that community without being at risk of not belonging in that community if they seek something that is not in that community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the idea of inclusion. I mean, we have a lot more to discuss around these topics, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think this is really helpful specifically for me, for selfish reasons, because I've been I've been losing sleep over there. Because I see myself in that little girl. She looks like me. She looks like my family. You know, and she's Central American. It's the same thing. The daughter, the mother daughter dynamic, which we will discuss in other podcasts. And so we will be at Stanford in January. A live podcast.
We're doing our live recording premiere. This is our first live recording.
Yeah. Our first live recording in Cali, which is like, all right, let's shake it up for the new year. New year, new us, but not really. New decade. I want to continue the conversation because this is an ongoing conversation specifically around immigration and the intricacies and the intersections as it relates to Black people, period. And I'm curious to see what other developments come from this Carol Sanchez case and how this plays out, because I'm actually concerned for the safety of her family, for the safety of Carol, the safety
of her family. Too. Yeah.
And the people, you know, what kind of repercussions they'll face, because in the court of public opinion, they have already sentenced her to death row.
Oh, yeah.
And so, we will keep on this. We're for this new year, we're doing live podcasts, right? We're launching Caña Negra, Porque No Somos Morenas. And
exacto.
Extremely important to note, Black with a Q, Negra with a capital N. Okay. And so I will be primarily in Panama City. Me, Janvia, and I, that's where we hail from. And our resident Garifuna queen, Evelyn Alvarez. I'm Dash Harris.
Oh, we're doing a little outro. Yeah. All right, Cash.
Come on, Cash on. Let's go.
Hey, I am Jambia Williams Comrie, and I'm part of Caña Negra.
We'll work on that.
We're going to work on that.
We had it on our hearts.
Yes.
Like, for real. And so we wanted to bring this because I didn't see any type of discourse that even addressed a portion of what we're talking about here.
Correct.
And so we'd love to hear your thoughts.
The Black immigrant perspective, that for me, that piece is just really important. And if you're listening and you feel like, oh, you know what? I really want to support Caña Negra. Shoot us an email. Evelyn, you have that email address somewhere, right? And you can donate some funds to us. You can also, if you want to, you can make it an intro or outro for us. You can, you know, do that and gift it to Caña Negra. You will have to approve the song, though.
And really, I would love to. I mean, we have our roster of the topics we're going to talk about, but if I would love to see people submit ideas as well.
Yeah. And so guests.
I want to make a
that
point think
that we should interview. Make sure that they're Black, real Black, you know, like Afro Black. And ideally from Latin America and or the Caribbean.
Most definitely.
The ones that knew they were Black since birth.
Yes.
Black since birth. Radio Caña Negra, Black since birth. So
I think that should be our hashtag.
Yeah, because this could turn into something else real fast here.
I know that's another podcast, and we are happy to bring our thoughts to you and talk about it. Please reach us at radiocañanegra@gmail.com, RADIOCANA. Sorry about the ñ. Google doesn't acknowledge it yet. Negra. NEGRA@gmail.com, and also you can reach us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Check us out.
I didn't know we had an Instagram and Twitter.
Wait, hold on. I got a tool for that.
You got the weed on?
Oh yeah.
She did that at my wedding.
Oh, that's her outro. Do it again. Bye, folks.
Caña negra porque no somos morenas.
And we've been black since birth.
Black since birth.
And we bitches. That's what Evelyn says too. I'm bitches.
I'm bitches. All right.
All right.
Shit, I'm bitches. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Oh, that is funny as